From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. With rain and sunshine galore, it's time to get your garden ready. Alexa Smarr, a horticulture educator and the Master Gardener Coordinator for the University of Maryland Extension, Baltimore County, joins us to talk all things green. We hear why soil testing is a must, what you can do to thwart common pests, and why Maryland's birds and bugs rely on native plants.
Plants are the first portions of the food chain, right? Nobody else can produce their own food except plants. So we have to have the right plants there in order to support the rest of the life out there.
Plus, the invasion of the spotted lanternfly. What threat does this voracious plant hopper pose, and how are experts tracking its advance? It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. With equal parts rain and sunshine, spring provides the perfect recipe for a garden. Whether you're plotting a large vegetable garden, adding some color to your balcony, or laying down fresh landscaping, a master gardener can help you along the way. How do you keep pests from gobbling up your greens? What benefits do native plants have in supporting the food chain? How do you know if your soil is fertile? Joining us with some answers is Alexa Smarr. She's a horticulture educator and the Master Gardener Coordinator for the University of Maryland Extension, Baltimore County. Alexa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Excited to have you. What is a Master Gardener?
Sure. So the University of Maryland Extension trains Master Gardeners to become volunteer educators on behalf of University of Maryland Extension. So as Extension, our purpose is to educate the community free of charge, available to all citizens as much as possible. And the Master Gardener volunteers really help us extend our outreach. I, as the paid faculty, cannot teach 800,000 residents of Baltimore County by myself. So these volunteers that we're able to train provide a huge support to the outreach that we're able to provide.
Are you a Master Gardener as well as Master Gardener Coordinator?
I am not. I'm not a Master Gardener volunteer. So to be a Master Gardener, you take a 60-hour training course through University of Maryland Extension. I have my degree in horticulture, so I hope I've exceeded a little bit of that. But I love working with the volunteers, and we're always looking for avid gardeners to help us teach.
Let me pick up on one of the questions I posed in the intro about soil. How do you know if your soil is fertile?
Sure. So a soil test is our automatic go-to that we tell people to make sure that they're having done in their gardens and in their landscapes before planting, before fertilizing. You don't know what you need to spread until you've done a soil test. So those are pretty simple to take. Couple samples around your yard, mix them in a bucket, stick them in a baggie, and send them off to a lab. And we have instructions through University of Maryland Extension on how to do that and some labs that you can send them to.
So you're talking about mixing it from different parts mm-hmm. of your yard, but obviously a plant is going to go in one part or another part of the yard. Why wouldn't you do individual samples?
Sure. So if you have a vegetable garden, of course, you're going to take them from places within your garden, but you don't want to hit some strange outlier portion of soil that you're submitting only that. So it helps the soil test lab to get a more even reading because chances are you're not going to go and amend just that space where that plant is going. You're going to amend, you know, the whole garden, the whole bed, your whole lawn, whatever it is that you're trying to amend. You're going to do the whole space.
Amend meaning bring
fertilize.
Bring the soil to a better growing capacity. If you just buy a random bag of fertilizer and mix that in, will that be sufficient?
It might be, but you just don't know what you need unless you've had a soil test. And a lot of people try to spread lime. They hear, oh, it's the time of year to put lime down, and that adjusts the pH of the soil. But you don't know what your pH is and if it needs that adjusting until you've had a soil test. So in Maryland, homeowners are also prohibited from spreading phosphorus fertilizers unless they have a soil test proving that it's required. So you can go buy it at Home Depot or some box store or any store, really, but you may be spreading it when you're not legally allowed to based upon our fertilizer laws.
Well, if you just go ahead and try to grow without amending the soil or checking it out, what happens?
So for ornamentals, meaning, you know, trees and shrubs and annuals and perennials, you're probably going to be fine. Our soil around here is mostly fine, and we don't need a lot of fertilizer for those plants. For a vegetable garden, however, they're heavy feeders, and you could end up with some deficiencies, you know, if you have inadequate nutrients. So it's always ideal for a vegetable garden. We recommend that you get a soil test every year so that you know what's going on. In lawns or ornamentals, I mean, maybe once every 3 years is adequate just to double check and make sure everything's looking good.
So you mentioned ornamentals, including grasses and shrubs. What are some popular choices this time of year?
Sure. So native plants are always popular at this time of year. People are looking to put in their trees, their shrubs, perennials. And so there's a lot of them that are popular. Black-eyed Susan people love around here. Folks are looking for blooms this time of year.
How do you know if something is a native plant?
It's really hard. People have a variety of definitions for what a native plant is. Some people say, well, if it was here before Columbus came over, then it's native. And, you know, some people say, well, if it grows, you know, roughly in this area, you know, it's okay if it's from North Carolina instead of originally from Maryland. But in general, you know, we want it to be somewhere from this continent, somewhere from the eastern seaboard. You know, from the mid-Atlantic would be ideal for it to be a native plant in this area. I don't tend to be a total purist. You'll limit your choices pretty far in that way. But, you know, it's a good idea to find things that co-evolved. And that's the home run point of a native plant, right, is that it co-evolved with the wildlife that we have here, right? So if we don't have insects, we don't have the songbirds that we like. And if we don't have the plants that they grew up or evolved to feed on, then we don't have those insects.
This is also a time to focus on cold season vegetables. Like what falls into that category?
Sure. Cold season vegetables, right now is kind of the time to direct sow a lot of our greens and a lot of our root vegetables. So things like beets, cabbage, collards, kale, carrots, parsnips, spinach, all of those things are things we would direct sow, meaning put the seed in the ground right in our garden versus trying to grow a transplant in a greenhouse.
So right into the ground right now with the temperatures as they are is going to be fine.
That's going to be fine for those plants. You don't want to start putting what we call your warm season crops, which is tomatoes, peppers, squash, melons, eggplant, things like that. Those you're not going to want to put in the ground yet. They're not ready.
When would you get to those?
Closer to the middle of May towards the beginning of June. So we usually tell people to put their tomato transplants, right? Not a direct seed, but a transplant in like June 1.
So this would be a time to start those kinds of plants inside?
It would. So now's the time to be starting your warm season ones inside, putting your cold ones outside. And then, like I said, towards the end of, you know, May, beginning of June, you'll be ready to move some of those warm season crops outside. And things like squashes and melons and cucumbers, those can all go directly in the ground at the end of May.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Master Gardener Coordinator Alexa Smar of the University of Maryland Extension in Baltimore County. We're talking about early spring gardening. Native plants, you've mentioned, highly encouraged by the extension. Why are you so excited about native plants?
Personally, I'm excited about native plants because I have a special interest in insects. In general, though, I mentioned earlier the idea of coevolution, and that's really the home run of native plants, is that our ecosystem that we're trying to support relies on the plants and animals that evolved here together. So while a tree from Asia, of course, is still making oxygen, it's still processing pollutants from its roots. It's still giving us a lot of really great ecosystem services, but we find that introduced species that aren't from our area will support maybe 1 to 2 caterpillar species in its canopy. And if you survey an oak tree, a native oak tree, you can find over 300 species of caterpillars on our native oak trees, which in turn, as I mentioned earlier, can support songbirds, which can support small mammals, and on, you know, up our ecological food chain. So having those native plants is very important. As we know, plants are the first portions of the food chain, right? Nobody else can produce their own food except plants. So we have to have the right plants there in order to, you know, support the rest of the life out there.
Another aspect of gardening, you say we need to consider feeding pollinators like birds, bees, and other insects. How do you make sure they have food throughout the year?
Pollinators are incredibly important, right? All of your fruiting plants that we love to eat would not be able to make the fruit that we desire without pollinators. And so the most important thing you can do to support pollinators in your landscape is to extend the growing season or the bloom season, really, for these pollinators that you're trying to support. So planting things that will bloom early, like a redbud tree or blueberry bushes that are native to our area. There's some perennials like Coreopsis that will bloom early in the season. You can plant mid-season bloomers like our milkweed for our monarch caterpillars, coneflower, jopieweed, basswood trees, and then you need late-season bloomers as well. So goldenrod, ironweed, New England aster, things like that will support from start to end. If you only have flowers at one time of the season, the pollinators show up and they say, "What a smorgasbord," and then your yard becomes barren and they either don't make it or they leave your area.
Are there some plants you see used too frequently?
I would say there are a lot of plants that are used too frequently, but maybe even more so in the wrong spaces.
Like?
So, for example, azaleas, right? Everybody loves their beautiful azaleas in the spring, but naturally they're understory plants. So they belong under a tree canopy in shady places, where they're not going to be super dense. They're going to be sort of shrubby and open. They won't get as many foliar diseases. But where do we put them? As in my own yard, right against the foundation of the house, and we try to cut them into a square, right? So things like that are sort of misuse of common plants. We have a lot of spruces that people love to plant in the area, and they're just not really well suited to our environment here. A little too hot, a little too humid.
I want to turn to some common pests and diseases that gardeners encounter, like deer, rabbits, squirrels, voles, insects, fungi. How do you figure out what's causing the problem?
Oh, that would be the magical answer, right? So we do a whole class on plant diagnostics. You can look at things like patterns. There's two things that we teach in diagnostics, signs and symptoms. So a sign is the physical presence of a pest or a pathogen like a fungi. So we're looking at mushrooms or the actual insect on the plant, right? If it's a symptom, we're looking at the plant's response. So that can be a little challenging if you're not familiar with what you're looking at. And then again, that pattern that we can see is sort of indicative. So I've seen a ground cover photo sent to me recently, and the ground cover was dying back, but it was all right along the driveway. So instead of a pest or disease, it's probably environmental, right? It's in this pattern in this certain space, and it's probably salt damage. 80% of our problems that we see in our plants are not pest or disease. They're environmental.
80%?
It is. It's surprising, but it's a high number. So it's usually, you know, it's too wet, it's too cold, it got frost damage, it salt damage, whatever the case may be. But most of our problems are something that's going on, what we call abiotic or a non-living problem.
Well, if it is something caused by an animal or an insect, can they be thwarted?
Depends. So deer, we'll start with deer, right? Large mammals. really difficult for most of us. We have deer pressure all over our yards. There are some repellents that you can use, and basically they're as good as they work until the deer get smarter than they are, right? So we spray things that don't smell good, and the deer will think, oh, I don't like that smell. And then when they figure out that it's not going to be harmful to them, you know, then they've overcome it. So if you're using a repellent, we tell people to rotate them. There's different smells out there. So rotate the smell that you're using. And then physical barriers for all types of mammals. Nets, fences, little cages. That's really your best bet for mammal damage.
To protect your plants.
To protect your plants.
With a fence or with a little cage.
That's correct.
Are there some plants that are just less delicious?
There are, especially to deer, though we always say nothing is deer-proof. We just have things that are deer-resistant. So some things that deer don't like are dogwood trees, pine trees, most hollies deer don't bother too much, coneflower, ferns. There's a wide variety, and University of Maryland has a really great publication listing some of these deer-resistant plants categorized by seldom damaged, occasionally damaged, frequently damaged, right? So none of it says your deer will never eat this, right? If there's a lot of them and they're hungry, they might try anything once.
That's Alexa Smarr, Master Gardener Coordinator for the University of Maryland Extension, Baltimore County. Need to take a quick break here on the record. I'm Sheila Cast. When we come back, a new invasive insect, the spotted lanternfly, is on its way. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Dust off your watering cans and dig out your work boots. Today we're talking gardening. My guest is Alexa Smarr, a horticulture educator and the Master Gardener Coordinator for the University of Maryland Extension, Baltimore County. Alexa, we spoke about some of the pests that frustrate gardeners, hungry birds, bugs, rodents looking for a free meal. But there's a new threat, the spotted lanternfly, an invasive plant hopper native to India, China, and Vietnam. How did the spotted lanternfly make its way to the U.S.?
So the spotted lanternfly is the new big bad guy on our radar, and it came over actually on a shipment of specialty stone from Asia, was brought into Pennsylvania, was first identified outside of a quarry in Berks County, Pennsylvania, in the fall of 2014. So we've been monitoring it. A lot of extension specialists in Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania Department of Ag have been watching this guy. They've been having quarantines in certain counties. And then from 2017 to 2018, we saw a pretty rapid expansion from what we had been seeing in the past, right? It would move a few counties a year or something like that. Between 2017 and into 18, we saw adults, most of them dead, but hitchhiking to New York. There's a population that's been established in Virginia now. It's been found in Cecil County.
In Maryland.
It's made its arrival to Cecil County. It's been in Delaware. It's been in New Jersey now. So we've sort of seen this eruption of its growth at this point. So we're expecting, like I said, we've already had a small population in Cecil County, but we're expecting this insect to start coming into Maryland on some major roadways like I-83 or I-95 to come down into Maryland.
Why is the spotted lanternfly a problem?
The spotted lanternfly is a generalist feeder, meaning it feeds on a really wide variety of plants. And there are a lot of plants of economic benefit that we're concerned about, mostly fruit trees, so orchard trees, cherries, apples, peaches, plums, you name it, grapes. So they're a very prevalent pest on grapes. And they're also a pest to our hardwood trees. So that would be affecting our timber industry that we're concerned about. But also what the general homeowner ought to be concerned about is sort of the way that they exist. So they're coming into people's homes. We've had reports of them being in people's hair and in their yards, and their dogs are eating them. And we've heard that if you thought the stink bug was bad, just wait till this one shows up.
How are experts trying to contain this spread of the spotted lanternfly?
The quarantines are a big piece of their attempt to contain them. So they're inspecting the vehicles that are moving in and out. So they hitchhike pretty readily on vehicles. And what we're asking for in Maryland is that you keep your eye out for these insects so that we can control them. Now, they can be controlled with some systemic insecticides in some of the trees that they tend to favor. But in general, we don't have a great way to control them. They're also a pest species in Korea, and they've been there longer. So a lot of our American scientists are traveling over there to find out what sorts of things they're doing to control, and hoping we can learn some lessons on this side.
Well, and I realize to see it, people need to go to the internet, and we'll put a link that will help people look at it. But what will people see around their homes? What should people have their eyes out for?
So at this time of year, they're still in egg mass. So they're overwintering as eggs on everything, trees, park benches, trash cans, whatever they found to lay their eggs on, their egg masses. If you don't know what you're looking for, it'd probably be a little difficult to find, but they lay them in a bunch on trees and they cover them with sort of a clay kind of putty looking material. Again, if you see a picture, you would probably be able to see it in a landscape. Once they hatch, which will be mid to late May, you'll see the nymph stage, or the young juvenile stage. They're about the size of maybe your pinky toenail. They're black with white spots. They don't have wings yet. They'll be feeding kind of at the soft tips of plants. They have a few stages that are just black and white. Their last juvenile stage is red and black with white spots. The adult is about an inch long.
Not small.
It's pretty large. Their wings are sort of gray with black spots. And when they open their wings up, their back wings are bright red. They're very easy to notice if you know what you're looking for.
And so if you see them, what should you do?
You should contact your county or your city extension office. We'll be able to point you in the right direction. If you can't get a hold of your extension office, which you should be able to, you can contact Maryland Department of Agriculture.
And we'll put some of that information on our website, the On the Record page at WIPR.org. And that's Baltimore County Master Gardener Coordinator Alexa Smarr here on the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're covering a range of gardening topics, from soil testing and native plants to thwarting common garden pests. Before we're out of time, I want to ask you about some of the resources provided by the University of Maryland Extension. What can people find online?
Online, the best resource for the average person in Maryland is the Home and Garden Information Center. We call it the HGIC. There are hundreds of fact sheets, all specific to Maryland and pests and problems and native plants and veggies and all sorts of things. There's a really great planting calendar of when to put your things in the ground and when to transplant inside. All of those things that we talked about earlier. Great publications, lots of videos, and on that site you can also choose the Ask an Expert button that's there, and you can submit up to 3 photos with a question to our folks at the Home and Garden Information Center, and they will get back to you within about 2 to 3 business days.
And we will link to all of that from our website. What Master Gardener events are coming up?
So there's several things on our calendar. So if you're in the city, the Master Gardeners will be selling plants at Silburn Market Day at Silburn Arboretum on May the 11th. They'll also be at the Waverly and JFX markets throughout the market season answering gardening questions. If you're in Frederick County, there's a plant sale on April the 27th from 9 to 1 at the Frederick News Post Building. Harford County, if you're in that area, the Bel Air Market will have Master Gardeners at it. And both Carroll and Baltimore County will be having plant sales at their respective ag centers on May the 18th.
That is a lot coming up.
Just a sample. Absolutely.
We will make sure people have access to all that information. Really grateful to you for this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Alexa Smar is a horticulture educator and the Master Gardener Coordinator for the University of Maryland Extension, Baltimore County. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have links to the University of Maryland Extension resources and to Master Gardener events coming up soon, including that annual plant sale at the Baltimore County Center for Maryland Agriculture on May 18th. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us. Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.